Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on current events in our economy right after this. You know, a $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it. A Budweiser six-pack is taxed 43%. And a fifth of Jack Daniels, when you buy it, costs you 72% in tax. Now, you know, government taxes us all, and anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms is also taxed. But what is it that government is doing to produce, prepare, or deliver, for which the government gets paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, or 72% for a drink? Does the pizza parlor make a 38% profit on that pizza that they have to buy the ingredients to make, prepare it, cook it, serve it, and pay rent on the store that you sit in to eat it? Well, why does the government get paid more in tax than the people who actually produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that we all buy? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. Remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and it's free of charge. Our school, Tax and Status, is available on compact disc for adult home education, and if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on to our archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org, or call us direct, 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? Hey, we've been talking about current events in our economy, and one of the stories that's in the current issue of the International Forecaster deals with Great Britain. Great Britain's bankrupt. They're just as broke as we are. And when you take a look at the balance sheets on these national economies, these national governments, and then you compare that with the Greeks, for instance, or with the Japanese, or with the Russians, or anybody else, you'll find out that when you compare the gross domestic product of various countries and then the debt that these governments are carrying in relationship to that gross domestic product, that the country that's the worst off and has the poorest balance sheet on planet Earth is Japan. They have a balance sheet that is now 227% of their gross domestic product. That means that they would have to take everything that those people create and produce for 2.27 years just to pay their debt. Now, when you come to the United States, we're a little bit smarter than the Greeks. They're at 112% in Greece. Here in the United States, our numbers are over 200% also, but we have a very constructive way of putting the numbers together so that it comes out at 95%. So we fudge the numbers, and then we advertise it's 95%. Well, you know, the difference between 95% debt to GDP and 112% isn't all that far apart, you know. It's 12 percentage points is all we're talking about there. You know, 12 and 5, 17%, 12 and 5. Well, you know, we're bankrupt, and we don't want to admit it. So what we do is we have the rating agencies over here downgrade the Greeks. Now, let me ask you this. If the Greeks credit rating isn't 3A, and it's really maybe more like C or something like that. And we Americans are only a few percentage points behind them, and that's what we're advertising. Why is ours AAA and theirs is C? Shouldn't ours be A or B or something like that? And why do the Japanese have a 3A triple rating when they've got 227 and the Greeks only have 112? You know, what's going on there? So it tells me that there's some phony accounting going on over here, and there's a lot of chicanery going on behind the scenes. But let's take a look at this story here. It's just a paragraph. It says, we've been asking this question about the U.S. for years. And the manufacturing sector is supposed to be the engine of growth to drive the United Kingdom out of the downturn. But with such a small engine, what are the chances of recovery? Manufacturing now makes up just over 10% of the economy. The U.S. is about 13%. So I underlined that last statement right there. 10% of the British economy is done or covered in their GDP by manufacturing. Here in the United States, it's about the same. It's 13%. So a question arises, well, how much was it in the past? In 1960, here in America, 63% of everything that we did in this country was based on manufacturing. We manufactured Caterpillar tractors, and the Stanley Tool Company was manufacturing Stanley tools, and the Whirlpool Company was manufacturing Whirlpool appliances. But now Whirlpool has moved their operations to Mexico. Caterpillar still has factories and plants here, but they have factories and plants other places in the world. It would seem like to me, if we went back in time and we just took a look, Henry Ford used to make all of his cars here in America. They don't do that anymore. They make their cars in other places. In fact, for many years, they made the sub-assembly parts, and probably still do, down in Mexico in the free trade zone. And it's cheaper to do that. And it makes sense to do that. And I'm not arguing with Ford or with anybody else. You know, business is business, and I'm a businessman. I can understand that. But how does that benefit you and me, Joe Sixpack, here in the United States? Let me tell you a little story. I was running a company up in Boise, Idaho, called Atlantis Manufacturing Company. We manufactured furniture. Had 30 employees. One day I got a letter from the Small Business Administration, and they offered in their letter to loan me, that is the Atlantis company, a little small corporation, $500,000 if I would like to move my business to the free trade zone in Mexico. Now, for those of you that may not have heard of the free trade zone, it's simple enough. You go to Mexico, and there's a strip of land along the U.S.-Mexican border. I think it was 30 miles deep into Mexico. And you go down to Mexico. Now, you have to get licensed and bonded and insured. It's not something that you just do overnight. It takes some time, effort, and energy to do that. But you can buy land, take on a Mexican partner, incorporate in Mexico, build or rent a facility. They suggested for me Juarez, Mexico. That's where they wanted me to move. That's where they suggested that I go and set up shop. Now, the wage scale in my factory at that time was $3.25 to $6 an hour. This is in the late 70s. $3.25, I think, was minimum wage, as I recall, and $6 an hour was skilled help. And we had 30 people employed. Now, if I move to Juarez, Mexico, these employees here in the United States all lose their 30 jobs. And we're going to hire 30 Mexicans to work in these very same jobs, except for management. So typically you would move to the border town on this side of the border, which I don't know what the opposite to Juarez is, but it's in Arizona, as I recall. And then we just drive across the border to work. And we can buy lumber in the United States or Mexico, and it goes across the border duty-free. And our furniture that we manufacture in Mexico comes back across the border duty-free. So it makes all the sense in the world to go to Mexico and pay those people $2 an hour, $2 an hour, or less, in the free trade zone, make your furniture down there, ship it into the United States, and then distribute it all over the United States, just, which is what we were doing anyway. And I looked at that. This is back about 1978, 79, 80, along in there, and I said, why in the world would our government want a policy like that? Now, this is long before we ever heard of outsourcing and offshoring, but it was the policy in 1978. That was in the Carter administration. It probably was the policy before that, I can't tell you. It was certainly the policy during the Reagan administration, and then Bush won, and then Clinton, and then Bush II, and it's certainly the policy today. Now, we have 14 million people unemployed here, so I thought I'd tell you that little story because it's an adjunct to what our problem is, not just in this country, but the UK as well. Notice that in the UK, you're down to 10%. I don't know where your economy was in 1960 as it relates to manufacturing, but I would guess that it was probably close to the same numbers here in the United States. So what's happened to the jobs in Great Britain, and why are you in such economic crisis over there? Well, in the Bible, there are 17 economic laws. There's a law called tithing. We've replaced that with income tax. And then there's laws that say, thou shalt not steal, and you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. There are prohibitions against paper money, stocks and bonds, usury and interest. And we practice all of those. And there's an outcome that comes from it. So let me give you a little rule here. It's called the Rule of 72. Rule of 72. And when you violate this rule, there's an outcome that comes from it. And that's just the way the real world works. And here's the way this Rule of 72 works. If you divide the interest rate that you're paying on your car, your house, or whatever it is, into 72, you'll get a number. So let's try it, and I'll show you how this works. Let's suppose that the interest rate on your car is 14%. So what we do is we take 72 divided by 14, and that's 5.14. Now, how much money do you owe on your car? Let's say that you bought your car and it was $40,000. And you're making payments on this car every month, and the interest rate is 14%. Well, what that tells us, that 5.14 tells us, is that with that kind of an interest rate, the $40,000 debt carried forward for 5 years would double the debt to $80,000. See how that works? Let's try a little lower interest rate number. You got a house, and you paid $100,000 for the house, financed it for 30 years, and you're making your payments. And we take the 72 and divide that by 6, and then that's 12 years. So every 12 years, the number doubles. So your 100,000 in 12 years would double to 200,000. 24 years, it would double to 400,000. And if you did it for another 12 years, then it would double to 800,000. And so here's what's going on. Do you remember when we had these high interest rates of 20% back about 1980? And people would go in and they'd borrow money at 20% interest to buy a house. Let's just try that. Go buy a $100,000 house in 1980. Let's pay 20%. Take 72 and divide it by 20. Every 3.6 years, the principal balance on the house doubles from $100,000 to $200,000. That's just 3.6 years at 20%. Isn't that amazing? All right. It's called the magic of compounding. And we here in the United States fell into this trap, our government leaders, our politicians. Either were conspiring with the banks or they were ignorant and the banks took them in. I'm not quite sure which it was. But what happens is that the firemen and the policemen and the teachers and the other public employees, they want to have a pension. And they want to have something when they retire. So the union comes into the picture and they say, "Hey, we want a contract, and we want you to pay us this amount of money, and then when we get to the end of our working career, 20 years, 30 years, we want you to pay us this retirement." And so they do that. They sign this contract over here, but they don't take into account the magic of compounding over a long period of time. And so the interest that compounds on the bonds that these cities, states, and municipalities, and limited improvement districts and so on, the various authorities, you know, like the New York Port Authority, they issue bonds and they pay interest on those. Well, that principal doubles every so many years. And so it's guaranteed by the taxpayers. And so now what's happened is that we're getting into the numbers like 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. And it works in the opposite direction. If you're taking away from your manufacturing base and you're shipping that someplace else, then you have less and less to draw from, while at the same time the costs are expanding in the opposite direction. You're owing more and more money. And I mentioned to you yesterday, we're talking about Greece. And so the Greeks have fallen into the trap, and so have the Americans and the Britons and everybody else. But the Greeks have fallen in the trap, and they're the first one that we're observing now. They're on the brink of insolvency. And what do you have to do in order to solve this insolvency? Well, you've got to get to a point where you're actually paying more on the debt than you're accruing debt. You have to stop accruing debt, and then you have to start paying it off. And these people have become accustomed to living at a certain standard of living. So let me just explain it this way. Let's suppose you make $1,000 a month and you've got a certain standard of living. And then I come along and I say, "Well, let me give you $1,000 a month." Now you've got two. Now with $2,000 a month, you'd live a lot better, wouldn't you? And so we'll come along a little later and we'll double that to four. Now you're still only earning $1,000 a month, but because of your credit cards and because of your borrowing over here against your assets, You're now spending $4,000. You're living at the $4,000 level. God, that really feels good now, doesn't it? All right. But now we max out your credit cards and we consume all of your equity in your estate. And now your $1,000 a month will not service the debt. It won't pay the interest on this $3,000 a month that you've been borrowing and this $1,000 a month you've been borrowing for a long period of time. And so now you've got to go back and live at the $500 a month level. So you got $500 a month to service this debt, and you get to a point where not even that will do it. You can get to a point where not even the whole $1,000 a month will pay the interest on the debt. That's where the Greeks are. That's where the United States of America is. That's where Great Britain is. And the reason that you're in this boat is because at the same time that you were borrowing more and more, you were actually dismantling your income stream. You took your income stream and you shipped that off to China. At the same time, you continue to borrow more and more. And now you're at the point where you've got this debt that's due and no way to pay it. Now that's where all of us are worldwide. Some of us are in a little tougher straits than others. Iceland went first. They went upside down. And now Greece is next, Portugal is in the wings, Ireland, Italy, and Spain, and Belgium. I understand the other day I was reading a piece that Belgium's also upside down. The Japanese are also upside down, but nobody's after them. See, they're still servicing their debt, and they're still making their payments every month. But the way that we're making our payments is by promises to pay. See, in order to pay your debt, you have to give somebody something of equal value, and that's where balance of trade comes in. Balance of trade. And there's a little story here that deals with this thing called balance of trade that I think we ought to take a look at. It's called the trade gap. And it totaled $45 billion, down slightly from $45.6 billion in July. An analyst had expected the deficit to widen to $45.8 billion in August. Now, I know that sounds kind of esoteric, but let's think about it for a moment. Every month, the United States buys stuff from other countries in the world. For instance, we import a lot of oil. So a tanker pulls up to Saudi Arabia, and they load it up with oil, and they bring it over to the United States, to Houston, Texas, and they empty it out. And let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, that there's $1 million worth of oil on board the ship. Well, how do the Saudis get paid $1 million? Well, up in New York, in the financial center, the financial hub of the world, on 42nd Street, there's a hole in the ground, way down under the ground there, about 10 stories down. I hear stories. I've never been there and seen it, but I've seen some pictures of it. And there's a lot of gold down there, and it's in little cages, and actually some of them are kind of big cages. And when this transaction is made, somebody writes up a bill of sale, and then somebody writes a check. And so American dollars are being traded to the Saudis over there for their currency. I don't know what they're using over there. We'll call it the Arab money. And there's a value for Arab money, and there's a value for dollars, and then there's a calculation made as to how many dollars it takes to make how many Arab monies. And then it goes up here into the bank, and the bank goes down, and they take some gold bars, literal gold bars. They take some of those out of the United States cage, and they stick it over there in the Saudi Arabian cage. Isn't that special? Now, the Saudis are sitting over there, and they say, well, we would like to buy some Caterpillar tractors. And we've got $1 million to buy it with over there. So they go to Caterpillar, and they say, well, sell us 10 of these $100,000 tractors. And so they load those on a ship, and they haul them over to Saudi Arabia, and they unload them. And somebody over there writes out a bill of sale and writes out a check in Saudi Arabian money, and they send that to New York, and they go over to the Saudi cage, and they take out some gold bars, and they stick those gold bars over in the United States cage, and we've got a balanced deal. They sold us $1 million worth of oil, and we sold them $1 million worth of tractors, and the balance of trade balances out, and everybody's happy, and that just goes. That's the way business goes, and everybody's satisfied with that program. Now, what happens if at the end of the year the Saudis sent us 12 boatloads of oil, but we only sent them one boatload of tractors? Well, they've got an $11 million surplus, don't they? And so now, we're pretty crafty people over here, so we write up some things called bonds. They can be private corporate bonds, they can be national bonds, or they can be, it's an IOU. It's what it is, an IOU. It's a 3x5 card that says IOU $11 million. And we give that to the Saudis, and we do a little something more. We say, we're going to pay you 5% interest for holding this. If you don't demand that we pay you these 132 tractors that we owe you, if you hold off on that, we'll pay you interest on that. And so the Saudis are sitting there saying, well, let's see, we got $11 million. How many have I got here? Oh, I should have 11. 11, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, times 0.05. Hey, we'll pay you $550,000 a year for every year that you hold that note for us. And so at the end of the year, we send them another note. We owe you an extra $550,000. So now they got $11,550,000, and then the next year it's $12,100,000, and so on up the line. And we Americans have been paying, and you Britons over there, you've been paying people in China and Taiwan and all over the world these pieces of paper. And right now the Chinese are sitting on, it's coming up on $3 trillion worth of these IOUs that the United States owes to China. We owe them a lot of Caterpillar tractors. They've sent us a lot of big screen TVs, and they've sent us a lot of tennis shoes. And we haven't sent them very many Caterpillar tractors and Dell computers, and they're sitting there with all of these chits waiting, you know, for a big spending spree. And we don't have the wherewithal to pay it. Yeah. See, we don't have enough Caterpillar tractors to pay off. We don't have enough Dell computers. Now, they do have the manufacturing capacity over there to pay us with big screen TVs and tennis shoes, but we don't have the manufacturing capacity. Because, see, we sent ours over there. For instance, if you buy a Buick automobile, it's made in China. Buick automobiles are not made in the United States of America anymore. They're all made in China. So I just wanted to let you know that when you buy this $20,000-$30,000 Buick automobile, we have to send the Chinese a $30,000, you know, IOU, which just sits over there on their books. Now, if those people ever came into the marketplace and said, hey, we want to spend some money over here, we'd be in a world of hurt. World of hurt, because we can't pay off. And to illustrate that, the Japanese, who also have a big balance of payments, see, we owe the Chinese $3 trillion. Well, we owe the Japanese about three-quarters of a trillion. And they had a $300 billion tidal wave over there. Remember that in March? They had this big tidal wave. And then it wiped out a lot of their infrastructure over there. The Japanese actually have enough money in the form of IOUs from the United States to pay for that two times over. No problem at all. They can just sit there, cash in their IOUs, and pay for it. But if they did that, it would so disrupt the economic system around the world, because you see, the United States doesn't have the money to pay. We don't have the goods to pay. You see where our dilemma is? So with all of this massive debt, with our balance of payments, and then we've got another debt problem over here. See, we've got our own national debt. Our government is in debt. It isn't just Caterpillar tractors and oil. We're also in debt at the federal level. And then all of our states carry debt. And all of our counties carry debt. And all of our cities carry debt. And when you total up all of that debt, it's more than $100 trillion. Yeah, we Americans are buried in debt, $100 trillion. And our national economy is only $14 or $15 trillion a year, and we owe this $100 trillion. Can you see that we can't pay off? And then if you add interest to that, you know, 5, 6, 8, 10% interest onto that, the interest is mounting up every year, higher and higher and faster than we can produce. See where our dilemma is? And it's not just us. The people in Great Britain have the same problem, and the people in France and Germany and so on. And what's happening here is this rule of 72 is catching up with everybody in the world. And what that means for all of us is that we're not going to get paid. All of you people who have pensions are not going to get them. And all of you people that have your money tied up in 401ks and Kroger plans, you're not going to get them. And all you people that have money in the bank, you're not going to get it out. All you people that have stocks and bonds, you're not going to be able to cash them in. Isn't that just real special? All of this money that we think we have, that we believe we have, is actually owned by the banks and the corporations. They actually hold title to your house. They hold title to your car that you're making payments on. They hold title to all of these goods that you're making payments on, you know, every month on your big screen TV and your credit cards and so on. So about 1% of the people in the world hold title to the other 99% of the people in the world's chattels and property. That's where the world is today. Now, it was a carefully controlled and contrived move on the part of that 1% to accomplish that goal, and they did it in spades. And so the people who are in debt are being foreclosed on. And right at the moment, it's just getting started. The ball is just starting to get rolling. The snowball is just, you know, still up on top of the mountain. And they're working on Greece first. But as that snowball comes down the mountain, it's going to accelerate in size and speed. And when we look in Bible prophecy, this is in Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, Revelation 6, 7, 17, and 18. And, you know, try Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. There's quite a little story there that comes from God, the creator of the universe himself. He said, you know, there's going to come a climax, a crisis in the world. And in the Bible, it's called the Great Tribulation, or Jacob's Trouble. And this is where the world is today. And the Messiah, Jesus, his disciples asked him, they said in Matthew 24, they said, hey, tell us what it's going to be like at the end of the age, the end of the world. And he said, all right, boys and girls, gather around, and I'll tell you the story. And they did. And in Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, he said, all right, here's the way this is going to come out. So what you're reading in USA Today and what Brian Williams and Scott Pelley and Diane Sawyer are reporting to you on the 6 o'clock news is what we have had in our Bible prophecy for about 3,000 years. Isn't that special? Thought you'd like that. And that's being reported to us regularly in the International Forecaster. Not in biblical terms. Bob Chapman doesn't write, you know, thus saith the Lord. What he's doing is he's giving us facts and figures about the trade deficit. And that's a part of international geopolitics, and that's what the Bible is all about. It's about international geopolitics. It is the world's foremost authority on international geopolitics. Yeah, I got to give you a reminder here. We're at the halfway point, and the FCC requires that we tell you that. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, when we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. $49.67. And if you're online, you can go directly to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and download that free General Law CD package right there on your computer. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about current events in our economy. And with the balance of payments program taken care of, let me circle those two off. The information that we're giving you comes from the International Forecaster. That's where the raw material comes from. My editorial comments and my views and beliefs I'm adding to that. We also have an unemployment problem here in the United States. It's about 12%. Well, they tell us that it's 9.1%. And we have a thing here called U1, U2, U3, U4, U5, and U6. And what that means is it's unemployment number one category, unemployment number two category, unemployment number three category, and so on up the line. What we're being told with the 9.1% unemployment rate is called the U5 unemployment category. And what they're reporting on is the number of people that are actually drawing unemployment benefits every week. Here's the paragraph. It says, the number of Americans filing claims for jobless benefits was little changed last week, showing the labor market is making scant progress. Applications for unemployment insurance payments decreased 1,000 in the week ended October the 8th to 404,000. Labor Department figures showed today, and economists forecast 405,000 claims according to the median estimate in a Bloomberg News survey. The number of people on unemployment benefit rolls dropped to the lowest level in 6 months. All right. Kind of esoteric and kind of obfuscated there. A bunch of random numbers that don't mean very much. But in the week just ended, there were about 404,000 people that walked in, and they said, hey, I lost my job. I want to sign up for unemployment. Now, I think there's about, 2 or 3 million people who are actually drawing unemployment every week right now. And they, in some cases, they've been drawing it for 99 weeks, or will shortly be the 99ers, they call them, in this country. The usual program calls for you lose your job, you go sign up for unemployment, and they pay you for 13 weeks. And then if in 13 weeks, now that's 3 months, if in 3 months you didn't find a job, you go in and you tell them your hard luck story, and they'll extend that to 6 months. You know, if they say, well, you've been working hard and trying hard, we'll give you another 13 weeks. But in 26 weeks, the rules are, too bad for you, go starve to death. Well, this recession has been branded the worst recession since the Great Depression of the 1930s. And so Congress has enacted benefits to unemployed people beyond that 26 weeks. It went to 52 weeks, and now it's up to 99 weeks and so on. And the people who are on these various programs are branded as U1, U2, U3, U4, U5, and U6. If you band all of those together, let's take, for instance, a guy who became unemployed in 2009, and he drew his benefits for 26 weeks, and then he drew his benefits for another 26 weeks, and now he's not getting any benefits at all. He's called a U6. That's a guy that is no longer counted as unemployed. Isn't that special? That's right. Because if he's not in the program, if he's not actively seeking work, if he's one of the guys that just gave up and quit, if he's a black fella in Baltimore standing on a street corner with a couple of felony convictions, that's the guy we're talking about. He's unemployable. Nobody will hire him. I mean, even if they had a job, they wouldn't hire him because he's got these felony convictions. Isn't that just something? The government wouldn't hire him and corporations wouldn't hire him. The only thing this guy can do is sell drugs on the street. And then when he goes out as an entrepreneur and he sells drugs on the street, the government comes along and says, wait a minute, now you're competing with Rexall and Pfizer and Merck, and we can't have that. And so they arrest him and throw him in jail because he's an unlicensed drug dealer. It isn't that Americans are opposed to drugs. Americans are drug addicts. And because we're drug addicts, that's the way the game is played. That's what we are. But we have two ways that we dispense drugs in this country. We have legal drugs that we buy down at Walgreens, and then we have illegal drugs that we buy on the street corner. And one of my students the other day came in, and he's a druggist. He works for Walmart, and he gets paid, you know, for turning out drugs. And so I said, hey, Todd, tell me the story on this marijuana. He says, well, we don't sell marijuana at Walmart. We sell Marinol. And the way that works is you go to your doctor and you tell him that you have this problem. You have headaches and pain, one thing and another, and you'd like to try Marinol. And he'll write you a prescription for Marinol. You bring it down here, and I'll fill that for you. And I said, well, how much does that cost? And he said, about $500 a month. So if you want a Marinol prescription for marijuana in pill form, it's $500 a month. And so he said, a lady came in the other day, and she had a prescription for Marinol. And she asked me, well, how much is this going to be? And Todd said, well, I told her, sit down, because this is going to shock you, but it's $500 a month. And she said, $500 a month for this prescription? And he said, yeah. And she said, well, no thanks, I'll just go down and buy it on the street corner. And I kind of chuckled a little bit, and I said, well, how much does it cost down on the street corner? And he said, about $200 a month. So you see why the government and why Merck and Pfizer and the big pharma companies are really upset about marijuana and things like heroin. And what's that white powder that they sell so much of? I'll think of it here in a minute. But, you know, these drugs that are sold on the streets, you know, they don't sell heroin at Walmart. They got another trade name for it. I forgot now what the trade name is that they use. And here's the trade name, though, for that white powder that you buy and snort, you know. Yeah, it's called Ritalin. And we give it to our children, you know, in the third grade. Yeah. So we're training all of our children to be drug addicts right in public school. Then when they get out, we don't want them to buy the white powder on the street corner. We want them to buy the white powder in pill form down here at the Walgreens or the Walmart store. And then if we catch you buying it anywhere else, see, that's called illegal drug sales. I just wanted to point that out. So you got a free market over here which sells these same drugs for about half what you pay for it when you get a prescription from the doctor. So the real argument in life, if you want to know where the economics of it is in the pricing and in the monopoly and control that government has over these drugs. All right, so with that in mind, just thought I'd point that out to you. Now, going back here to unemployment, the unemployment rate in the United States at this moment in time, when you add all of them up, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 22.4%. At the peak of unemployment in 1935, it was 25%, 1 in 4. So we're only a couple of percentage points away from reaching that all-time high. Now, here's one that'll blow your socks off. Instead of trying to estimate how many people are standing on the street corners and can't find a job or are unemployable, they actually took a survey. They just went out and they took a survey of 1,500 households nationwide and asked this question. In your household, how many people, if any, are looking for a full-time job? And the answer was 28% of households in the United States reported in the survey that they had at least one member of the family looking for a full-time job. Now, if you were to call the Gordon household today and ask that same question, I would say, no, I'm one of the 72% that's not looking for a job. I'm fully employed. I'm working so hard, I haven't got time to go look for a job. I'm perfectly happy. My wife is fully employed. My son is fully employed. We're not looking for a job. And 72% of households in America would make that report. We're fully employed and we're not looking for work. But the shocker is 28% of households said, yeah, we got at least one here looking for a full-time job. Now that sends me a pretty powerful signal. It says the real unemployment rate in this country is 28%. You know, like it or lump it. Government tells you it's 9%. And the government's not lying to you. U5 is 9%. And what they're not telling you is U1, 2, 3, 4, and 6, the other five categories of unemployed people. So I just thought I'd make that report. Now, where did I get this information? Well, again, I got it from Bob Chapman. And I'm not smart enough to figure this out, and Chapman is. He subscribes to the publications that come from the Department of Employment or from the Department of Education or from the various governmental entities or from other newsletters or from Bloomberg Newswire or the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times and so on. And then he compiles all of that information into various sections of his newsletter, which the average Joe Sixpack never sees or hears, and which you're not supposed to see and you're not supposed to hear this. And all of the news that we get from Diane Sawyer, God love her, you know, Diane, great lady, but she does not tell us the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey used to call it. You know, here's the rest of the story. She tells us the story. Unemployment's 9.1%. She's telling you the truth. She is not lying to you when she says unemployment's 9.1%. And then she does not tell you about the other five categories of unemployed that when you add them up all together, including the people who are out of unemployment insurance and aren't being counted anymore, that the real rate is 22.4%. And then if we went out and surveyed people, it's 28%. She's not telling you that. And if she did, she'd lose her job. She's not supposed to tell you that. And then she doesn't. That's what she gets paid for. And so does Brian and Scott. God love them. Nice guys, I'm sure. But now, Brian, Scott, and Diane are all nice people. This guy, Bob Chapman, he's not a nice guy at all. This guy, he just says, let me tell you where the bear does it, like it or lump it. Here's where the rubber meets the road. It costs you about $160 a year if you've got the stomach for it. I've had people that I have given sample copies of this to And I've come back and said, would you like another copy of the International Forecaster or the Privateer? And they've actually said, no, no, I don't want it. It's too depressing. I don't want to read that. It's too depressing. Well, okay. I'm not here to try to get you depressed, you know, and get you on some kind of an antidepressant drug. This may be more than you can handle, and I've had many people tell me that I can't handle it. Well, then for you, you know, just sit on the back of the bus and look out and enjoy the scenery and quit complaining. You know, things are going to be fine. When you get to your destination, somebody will tell you where to go. And they'll tell you when to get up. They'll tell you when to go to bed. And they'll tell you what to do in between. If that's satisfactory with you, then you're on the right track. Now, for the few of you who are sitting there saying, I'd like to know what the real answers are, then the real answers come from these private newsletters. And Bob Chapman's not the only guy that's got the answers. This is not the only guy that knows what the hell's going on. There's a fellow out in California. His name is Monteith, Dr. Stanley Monteith. He has a program that's called Radio Liberty. And he's just like Bob Chapman and Bill Buckler and Don McElvaney and so on. And they get on the air and they say, okay, let me tell you what's going on behind the scenes here. Here's what's happening. And they're very depressing, and I don't deny it. Diane Sawyer and the rest of them, those are uplifting people. They tell you the good news. They tell you things you want to hear. And there's a prophecy in the scripture that talks about that, where I think it was Isaiah that said that don't preach to me, don't preach the truth to me, preach deceits. Tell me what I want to hear. Make me feel real good all over. All right, with that, let's take this trade gap and let's take that one off. I'll take off this unemployment. And there's a thing here called student debt. Student debt. It's now topped $1 trillion. It's more money. You students out there that have been to college, you now owe more money than all the rest of your 300 million compatriots owe on all of their credit card debt combined. Isn't that special? Here it is. Your student debt has now passed $1 trillion. It's larger than collective credit card debt combined. Worse, it cannot be washed away in bankruptcy, and unless, of course, you're a child of a congressman. Let me read that one to you again. If you're the child of a congressman, a senator, or a representative, you can file for bankruptcy, and you can bankrupt out of your student loans. Dianne Feinstein's children can bankrupt out of student loans. The rest of us can't. Let me ask you a question here. Do you believe that the Senate and the House of Representatives, these public officials, should be above the law? That there should be a law for them and then a law for you? Well, let me show you how this works. When you want to go get a job, you have to have a Social Security account. That you have to sign up for Social Security. The Senate and the House of Representatives, they're exempted from Social Security. Did you know that? If you open a business, you have to comply with the EPA regulations and the OSHA regulations. But if you're a senator or representative, you don't have to comply with the EPA or OSHA regulations. You're exempted from. So when your Congress enacts legislation, they exempt themselves from the laws and rules that they're imposing upon you. Jesus made an observation one day. He said, you bind grievous burdens on this people that you yourselves would not so much as raise a finger. Isn't that just exactly the way it is today? They impose these regulations upon you, grievous burdens, heavy to be borne, and they themselves wouldn't put that on themselves. So nothing's changed. I just wanted to report to you that that's the way the game is played. And these are the people that, these are, in the Bible, are called the princes of Israel. Your elected representatives, the princes, your leaders, you know, the head honchos out here. This is the way they treat you. All right, student debt then. To make it worse, these kids are saying the same thing the idiot homebuyers said when they couldn't pay their mortgage because they bought a big house and couldn't pay for it. We did everything right. We did what we were told to do. And these young people are told, if you want to succeed in life, you have to go to college, and you should go to college, and you should get scholarships, and you should borrow money, and you should get a degree. All right, now you've got your degree. Now you got to go out into the marketplace and sell your skills and services. Let's see. You're 22 years old. You have a degree in anthropology, and you go out into the marketplace, and you're looking for a job as an anthropologist. So you come over to George Gordon, knock on my door, and you say, Mr. Gordon, I am a college graduate. Look at my degrees. Look at my papers. Look how smart I am. And I'm an anthropologist, and I'm looking for a job digging around in the ground looking for bones or artifacts. And I say to you, well, that's all well and good, son, but I don't need an anthropologist today. But what I could use is a fence builder. And you look at me like I'm stupid, like you think I'm going to go out here and work? Do something intelligent and constructive, like build fences to hold cows in? Honest to God, Mr. Gordon, do you believe I'm going to go out here and build buildings? Milk cows? Build fence? Clear trees? Oh, no, no. I'm gonna stand around the office, and I'm going to write books and do things. I don't know how many times I talk to people on the telephone, and they say to me, well, Mr. Gordon, I'm a computer whiz. I'd like to come there to your farm, and I'd like to work off my classes by doing your computer work. And I tell them, well, what I really need here is somebody that can run a bobcat, or somebody that can run a tractor, or somebody that can clear brush, or somebody that can build fence, or, you know, somebody that can work. Can you do any of that? Well, no, no. Oh, so you can't work, but you can stand around, pinch girls on the ass at the water cooler. Yeah, yeah. You can go on binge drinking, and you can raise hell in the neighborhood over here. Yeah, we know how to do that. Okay. But do useful, productive, meaningful, constructive work? Boy, it's getting harder and harder. Now you're finding out that your college degree qualifies you to drive taxi in New York City. And then you have to compete against people that are actual taxi drivers and been doing it for 30 years. How do you like that? Well, let me draw a line right through that one here on student debt. Remember, this is the International Forecaster, $160 a year. I recommend it highly for all of my students. It's the, just go online, type in theinternationalforecaster.com. All one word, theinternationalforecaster.com. Bob Chapman is the man that puts that out. Well, let me give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, there's the signal, says our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.